It is Red Friday, and it's another edition of The Shift on ESPN Wichita, 92.3 FM, Wichita's new sports leader. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. A reminder that this Saturday, you can now listen to the Raiders and the Bengals in the AFC wildcard game right here on ESPN Wichita, 92.3 FM. Should be a fantastic matchup between two AFC foes. Also, are you ready for the NFL wildcard weekend? ESPN Wichita has a chance for you to win a Tyreek Hill and Patrick Mahomes game time frame picture. All you got to do is follow and like ESPN Wichita, 92.3 FM. You can like the post. And for a bonus entry, you can tag a sports fan in your life in the comments below. As I just mentioned, it is Red Friday, which means we're getting very close to the NFL playoffs. It starts tomorrow first with Cincinnati and the Las Vegas Raiders. Then you'll get Buffalo and New England. And then on Sunday night, the Kansas City Chiefs will kick off their postseason run against the Pittsburgh Steelers, a team they beat by 26 a few weeks ago. They have the largest spread of any team right now in the postseason, that 12.5-point line, I believe it was the last time I checked. But let's just look at the entire playoff picture. And with this opening segment, I want to do something that I believe is not necessarily looking ahead, but how can the Chiefs make it in this postseason? How do you make a long postseason run? They've done it before. They've made back-to-back Super Bowls, won one of them. They've been to three straight AFC championship games and been at home in all three of them. So what needs to happen again for this Chiefs team to either get back to that AFC title game or to get to a third straight Super Bowl? What needs to happen? Well, number one, and I think a lot of people forget this because the teams that make the Super Bowl are usually really good football teams. There's no fluke if you make the Super Bowl. But what every team needs in the postseason is luck. You need luck one way or the other. When the Chiefs won the Super Bowl in 2019, the 2019-2020 season, they got luck that season. You know, you overcame a 24-point deficit. You got a little bit of luck in that game. The Baltimore Ravens, who were the one seed, were knocked out by the Tennessee Titans. Therefore, you didn't have to go on the road to Baltimore to play them in the AFC Championship game. You got Tennessee at home. Then in the Super Bowl, you overcame a two-score deficit in the fourth quarter. Luck is a big part of making it in the postseason. Now, last season, you didn't really have luck on your side because you lost all of your offensive line, basically. That's the break that Tampa Bay got. A banged-up offensive line for Kansas City meant that defensive front for Tampa Bay could feast on Patrick Mahomes. So going into this postseason, you're going to want a couple of breaks. You know, those breaks can be as simple as New England beating Buffalo in the first round. And maybe the Raiders knocking out Cincinnati. So you go from playing Pittsburgh to playing the Raiders in the wild card in the divisional game. Two teams you blasted in the regular season. And then maybe New England knocks out Tennessee and you get to host the Patriots for the AFC Championship. That would be the easiest path to the Super Bowl. I don't think that's going to happen. But one way or another, you need a break. To get to the very end, to get to the Super Bowl, and to eventually win that Super Bowl, you need luck. That's not a knock. I know some people say that being lucky is kind of a criticizing thing. It's criticism. You know, you're lucky. You didn't deserve to win that game. You didn't deserve to make it that far. But you can't deny every team that's won the Super Bowl has gotten a break. You need luck. Any sport, any championship, you need luck because it's a long postseason. You're playing the best teams of that season. And if you don't have any luck, you're simply not going to beat them just on sheer talent, on being the better team. You need a break one way or another, whether that happens in the game or that happens in another game in the playoffs. You know, a top seed getting knocked out, Kansas City's going to need that. So to make a deep run, the number one key is getting some luck. Number two, since there are so many teams in this AFC playoff field that you've lost to, one of the things you got to do, learn from your mistakes the first time around. You lost to Buffalo at Arrowhead Stadium. You lost to Cincinnati in Cincinnati. You lost to Tennessee in Nashville. You haven't played the Patriots yet. You beat the Steelers. But when you look at this AFC, you have to be able to learn from what you did wrong in the regular season. when you played Buffalo, I mean, you had some injuries here and there, but what was one of the biggest problems? You couldn't get off the field in the first half. Your defense was atrocious, and that offense was equally as bad. And back when Kansas City lost to Buffalo and Tennessee, turnovers were a big problem. A big problem in both of those games. And I think learning from those mistakes, taking care of the football, you know, if you're playing Buffalo, you know, making sure that guys aren't beating you over the top like they did on Dan Sorensen that night, you know, making sure you can contain Josh Allen both on the ground and through the air. You had done it before in the two previous matchups the year prior, but there was no resemblance of that team on that Sunday night game earlier this season. So learning from those mistakes, if you go up against Buffalo again, that's key and moving on to the postseason. When you play Cincinnati, or if you play Cincinnati again, what do you think the mistake was they made the first time around? Not defending Ja'Marr Chase very well. Not bracketing him. Not doubling him. Not putting much focus on Ja'Marr Chase. Blitzing on 3rd and 27. Treating it like a 3rd and 6, as Steve Spagnuolo said. Learning from those mistakes, being a much different team next time around, that's what wins you the games. I've always thought it's kind of silly when teams come out and say, well, we're not going to change who we are. We are who we are, and we're going to beat them the next time around doing the same type of stuff. We're not going to change much. And no, the Chiefs don't need to change a lot, but it's about being smarter. Do you really want to go out and be the same team you were against Cincinnati if you play Cincinnati in the divisional round? No, because you'll lose. If you defend Ja'Marr Chase the exact way you did in Cincinnati, you're not going to win that football game. And I think Steve Spagnuolo is smart. I think Andy Reid's smart that they're going to have a different approach. It's not changing your identity. It's just changing your approach. How are you going to win this game? Because the first time around, your game plan, it didn't work because it resulted in a loss. So number two, learn from those mistakes. That's how you make it deep into the postseason. And then number three, really have the chip on your shoulder. Avenge those regular season losses. All the criticism you got, all the hate you got from the national media saying you're done, you're down and out. Patrick Mahomes isn't what he used to be. You know, this Chiefs team isn't even going to make the postseason. They're not the top dog anymore. Use all of that. Have that chip on your shoulder. We kind of scoffed and laughed at New England when they did that. But guess what? They went to the Super Bowl a lot. And even if they were the one seed or the two seed or the three seed, it didn't matter. They were going to treat it like they were the six or the seven seed. And I know the playoffs were just expanded. So if they were the wild card team, the six seed, they would treat it just the same. Because if you go in thinking all teams are less than you, even if they are, some of those underdogs can catch you off guard. And that's why, even going into this game against Pittsburgh, everybody knows the Chiefs are a heavy favorite. The Chiefs know they're a heavy favorite. But still going into that game feeling like you're doubted, that's how you win. Having that aggression, that chip on your shoulder. They've got guys that play with a chip on their shoulder. Patrick Mahomes, though he can get fired up at times, he plays with a chip on his shoulder. Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, Tyrann Mathieu, Chris Jones, all those guys, all your superstars, they play with a chip on their shoulder. And at first, when I looked at the playoff picture and I thought, you're playing a lot of teams you lost to, or you very well could play Buffalo again, Cincinnati, Tennessee, teams you lost to. But you know what? That's the best case scenario, I think. It's tough to beat a team twice in a season, especially a team like Kansas City. But it gives that little extra motivation. You know, Tennessee is a team that humiliated you. Buffalo humiliated you. Cincinnati, they were puffing out their chest a week after that game. It was a huge win for them. But this is when you can show those teams, this is when it matters. Throw out what happened in the regular season. You can hang a banner if you want for beating us in October. You can do that. Be our guest. But this is when you can separate the men from the boys. Right, postseason football. The Chiefs have been the team that have rolled through the AFC. And yes, did they lose to Buffalo, Tennessee, Cincinnati? Yes, they did. And those were big wins for those teams. You lost to Tennessee, that's why you lost the one seed. You lost to Cincinnati, that's why you lost the one seed. You lost to Buffalo, you had your crown taken from you in the AFC for a couple of weeks. But this is when you can throw all that stuff out, all that noise out. You can show just who is the top dog in the AFC again. Because everybody knows it, whether they admit it or not. They know the only way they're getting to the Super Bowl is going through Kansas City. And that's not saying through Kansas City at Arrowhead Stadium. They have to go through the Chiefs. And for the last 2 years, nobody's been able to do it. They've tried and they've all failed. And we'll see what happens when the NFL playoffs kick off tomorrow, starting with the Bengals and the Raiders. The Chiefs will kick off at 7:15 Sunday night at Arrowhead Stadium against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Marco, any lasting thoughts on the Chiefs before they begin their playoff run and we go to break?
I think you cover a lot in that learn from your mistakes is the only thing really that I could think of is getting off to an early start offensively, creating a lead, trying to think of a game where they did just that, Cincinnati game offensively where they were up 28-17 going into halftime?
28-17, I believe it was 14-0 to start the game as well.
Yeah, had scored a touchdown on four of their five maybe offensive drives, something like that. They only had one drive, I think, at the first half of that game where they didn't end up with a score. It's got to be things like that early on for the Chiefs, just getting in that offensive flow that they need to be in, to let us know as fans, to let themselves know as players that it's like, all right, we can, our game plan, our offensive game plan is going to work against this opponent's defense. And then on the defensive side of the football, it's a matter of just doing the little things right with getting after the quarterback that you're going up against, tackling being a big one, and limit your penalties. Gosh, that's one thing that I'm worried about going into these games sometimes is not getting an exact repeat of Cincinnati because that was atrocious, but just don't give up a ton of yardage due to mistakes that force the referee to have to throw the flag out. And that's really just it. The luck part, I like it too, because I think every team when it comes to the playoffs is going to need some luck, or else you're just going to be, or else you're really earning your way to play for a Super Bowl, no matter who you are. So, that's what they got to do. They're one of the best teams in the NFL, one of the best teams in the AFC. I think it was Ben Roethlisberger that said it. They're not the one seed in this game, but they're the best team in the AFC. They're the two-time AFC champions, have been to three straight AFC championship games. Just got to go out there and execute. Got to go out there and know who you are and what level exactly that you can play at, because all season long, it's really just been the mental errors, the mental mistakes, the mistakes that you can't make as a championship team, but also mistakes that can be, that can't, that mistakes that don't happen to teams like who the Kansas City Chiefs are. They really are their worst enemy. Season in and season out, each time they go out there on the field. So, as long as they play Kansas City football and no drop passes, no missed tackles, and making and score and just getting into that flow that they can get into, that's what it will take. That's what it will take. Because it's no easy path to the Super Bowl to the Super Bowl this year out of the AFC.
It certainly isn't, and it doesn't matter if you have to go to Nashville. It doesn't matter if you're hosting Cincinnati, if you're playing Buffalo, playing New England. Those are going to be tough teams to beat. But you go back a couple of months ago, it felt very improbable that this team could even be in this situation. And now here they are, a two seed, and all you got to ask for is do the same stuff you've been doing in the postseason the last 3 years, and you can take care of business, because the Chiefs at their best is near impossible to beat. Right, if that defense is playing well, that offense scores over 30 points, you know, even the high 20s, you feel confident they're going to win that game. And do some of these teams scare me in the postseason? Hell yeah, they do. You know, Buffalo can be a very scary football team. The Bengals are a very scary young football team. Derrick Henry and the Titans, they can be scary. But the thing is, can any of those teams beat the postseason Chiefs, which we've come to know and love over these last 3 years? I don't think they can. And we'll see on Sunday night if that Chiefs playoff team is ready to go from the get-go, if it'll take a couple of weeks, or, you know, worst-case scenario, we don't even see the postseason Chiefs. But will be exciting for sure, and we'll have all weekend action of the NFL postseason. Again, the Chiefs will play at 7:15 Sunday night against the Pittsburgh Steelers. When we come back here on the shift, we'll get into the Houston Texans firing David Coley and break down the Chiefs' schedule for 2022. You're listening to the shift on ESPN Wichita, 92.3 FM, Wichita's new sports leader. Welcome back into the shift on ESPN Wichita, 92.3 FM, Wichita's new sports leader. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. A reminder that this Saturday, you can listen to the Raiders and the Bengals right here on ESPN Wichita, 92.3 FM. The AFC Wildcard Showdown should be a fantastic matchup between Derek Carr and Joe Burrow. And are you ready for NFL Wildcard Weekend? ESPN Wichita has a chance for you to win a Tyreek Hill and Patrick Mahomes game time frame picture. All you got to do is follow and like ESPN Wichita 92.3 FM, like the post, and for a bonus entry, tag a sports fan in your life in the comments below. We're still going through this NFL coaching carousel. Still some firings happening, and I think the one that always stuck out to me the most was Brian Flores being fired from the Miami Dolphins. However, I was pretty shocked yesterday when I found out that David Coley is out after one season with the Houston Texans. And the Texans were bad. Nobody's denying that. They were 4-13. But do you know the roster he had that he had to take over? He had a rookie quarterback, too. Tyrod Taylor, early on in the season, got hurt. So he had to roll with Davis Mills. And yet they still won some games. They beat the Titans. They beat the Chargers. I know they beat the Jags in there, but half of their wins were against very good football teams. But the Texans, as they always like to do, just continue to function like an awful franchise. First, it was Bill O'Brien making terrible moves, being a horrible coach, being a horrible GM. And then you go and hire David Coley, who still has 3 years left on his contract. Guaranteed money, by the way. And you fire him after one season. Did the Texans seem like they were heading in the right direction? I mean, you could make a point that they were. But it's not like this was an absolute atrocity. The guy who was fired midseason in his first year, Urban Meyer, there was a lot of things going on other than the Jaguars just losing football games. Right? We're all fully aware of what happened to Urban Meyer. Nothing was wrong with David Coley. Was he a home run hire? No. But you got to keep in mind, he didn't take over a very good roster. I think, Marco, wasn't Freddie Kitchens of the Browns, he was fired after one season. Right, but that's because he took over a loaded roster. And they didn't make the postseason. Like, that's being a bad coach. David Coley had nothing to work with.
Yeah, no. Pretty sure Kitchens came after that interim head coach, the crazy defensive coordinator.
Oh, yeah, Greg.
But yeah, exactly right. Kitchens had a team around him, and they were like, all right, let's see how this guy does year one. Maybe he can – I feel like he was getting more of a shot, which Cleveland there, it's like, man, you can't be doing that when you got a quote-unquote franchise quarterback in Baker Mayfield. Just too many coaches too many bad coaching situations over there for Mayfield.
It was Greg Williams, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
That was who the interim head coach was, and then Freddie Kitchens took over, was fired after one season. But when we look at David Coley, I mean, they were 4-13. Davis Mills wasn't that bad. He did more than Trevor Lawrence did. He did more than Zach Wilson did. This is a guy they took in, what, the third round? I mean, really, Brandon Cooks is your top player. You could make a case that Brandon Cooks is the best player the Texans had. They were in it down the stretch, nearly knocked off the Titans in the final week of the season. I don't understand why you need to make that rash decision. You know, maybe if you were looking elsewhere, you feel like you have a home run hire, then okay. But think about the message it sends right now. If you're a coach in this league, or at least you go coach for the Texans, You have one season to really show improvement. It doesn't matter what we give you. I mean, think about it. A general manager and an owner making this decision, they control who's on the team. They can go out and spend. They're the ones making the draft picks. So imagine that you start a job. All right, and they put you down in the basement. A terrible office space. Your computer, it's old. It breaks down all the time. You have no supplies. Your boss, they're like, this is a great opportunity for you. You know, we'll give you 3 years here. 3 to 4 years, and show us that you can make this company better. But we're not really going to do much to help you out. This is all going to be on you. And then 1 year into it, they come down to the basement and they say, all right, pack your things, you're done. I know we didn't give you much to work with, but you didn't turn in anything. You didn't do much for us. And even though you worked your butt off, you did the best you could working down in that basement with a terrible computer, no supplies, a chair that constantly breaks, your boss fires you. Like, how are you supposed to succeed in that organization? And then other people, if they wanted to go for that job, they feel like they have 1 year. They have 1 year to turn it around. And if they're not getting any help from their general manager, how are you supposed to win football games? How are you supposed to compete against some of these other teams that have elite quarterbacks, elite weapons? You can't. This is way more so on the GM and the owner than I feel like it is on David Coley. And now, I'm sure everybody's seen this stat, Mike Tomlin is the only active black head coach in the NFL after David Coley was fired. Brian Flores fired as well. But from a football standpoint, it's not like the Texans went 0-17 and they were by far and away the worst team in football. Even if they were 0-17, you get a top draft pick from it. But they were 4-13, had some good wins, were close in a couple of games. And I think the Texans are very boring to watch. They're not fun by any means. But David Coley had nothing to work with. Here's what Texans general manager Nick Cassiero had to say from this ESPN article by Sarah Bishop. Quote, I came to this difficult but necessary decision after reviewing our football operation, Cassiero said in a statement released by the team. While a change after one season is unusual, we had philosophical differences over the long-term direction and vision for our program moving forward. We appreciate Coach Coley for helping us navigate through a difficult season, but it is my responsibility to make decisions that I feel are best for our organization. It's fine if you had differences, but I feel like if you signed somebody to a multi-year deal, signed a head coach to a multi-year deal, you have to see it through a little bit. Even colleges see it through longer than one season. Because you understand in that situation, you're not a good football team. It's going to take some time. And if you give them no help through free agency, you don't make the best draft picks. Right, the Texans didn't have a pick, I believe, in the first or the second round, did they?
No, and Davis Mills was our first pick of the draft.
In the third round.
Yeah.
So that's what he's working with. A bad football team. Your GM didn't do anything in free agency, or very little at that. And then you don't even have a first or second round pick to work with. Your first pick is a quarterback as well. And then you're dealing with the Deshaun Watson case. I mean, there was a lot that he had to go through. And the Texans thought, and that's what frustrates me the most, is some of these teams think so highly of themselves. The Dolphins, going 9-8, think it's okay to fire a coach that won 7 games in a row this season. Who do you think you are? Like, what is the expectation every year for your team? If you're the Texans, what is your expectations with a rookie quarterback and no weapons to help him? And no first or second round pick? You think you're winning 10 games? You think you're winning the AFC South? Hell no. So I would say right now, I mean, I know the Giants' job isn't really enticing to many coaches out there. The Texans' job is not far behind because of how horribly run that organization is. I mean, seriously, how do teams continue to make wrong decisions? And if they don't have a home run hire here, that's an embarrassing move. That's an embarrassing move for the rest of the NFL. But that was the breaking news of yesterday. David Coley out after one season in Houston, went 4-13. With not much to work with. We'll see if he lands another head coaching job in the future. We also had the news yesterday that the Kansas City Chiefs schedule for next year finally released. And I got to tell you, it is a little bit of a doozy. I guess before I break down all those games, Marco, any that really stand out to you or that are exciting to you? Maybe you'll take a trip on the road and go see the Chiefs play an NFC team or maybe a very good AFC team?
I think the road trip to Arizona when they play the Cardinals is going to be an indoor game with Kyler Murray and Patrick Mahomes. Obviously, they had a preseason game this last season or this previous preseason. That one's very intriguing inside with those two quarterbacks. Coming back here, it's interesting that the Chiefs always have to go on the road to play a Tom Brady-led team. I don't know how many times Tom Brady has played in Kansas City, but it seems like he's always in his environment when he's going up against the Chiefs. But other than that, I mean, it's another tough schedule. Another tough schedule.
It's brutal.
It is. I think NFC teams that are on the road is Cardinals and 49ers, and then the Seahawks and Rams are coming to town.
That is correct, yes.
Yeah, that sounds a Rams game here. That would be awesome to go out and go see, too, for a home game. A lot of good games on the schedule for next year.
A lot of good quarterback matchups in this entire 2022 schedule. I think, as you pointed out, I've now been trying to think about it. The last time Tom Brady came to Kansas City in a regular season game, I know it hasn't happened under Patrick Mahomes. There's no way it was the Monday night game, was it?
I think it was the Monday night game.
That Monday night, beat down over New England 41-14.
Yeah, because think about it like this. The last two times Alex Smith played the Patriots, it was on the road in that opener.
Yes, and it spoiled the trophy ceremony as well.
Yep.
So it has been almost 8 years now, or will be 8 years when Kansas City takes on this schedule. That Tom Brady's been to Arrowhead Stadium. Maybe, you know, I know the schedule kind of works that if one team finishes in first place, the Chiefs obviously won their division, and they'll get Tampa Bay, who won in the NFC. So it just kind of works out that way. But who knows how much longer Tom Brady is going to stay in the NFL. I mean, he's certainly playing well enough to, but he's also, what, 43? Coming up on 44? Like, Tom Brady may never play again at Arrowhead Stadium. I mean, they can only meet now in the Super Bowl, so it would have to be in the regular season. But here is the breakdown of the Chiefs' home and away games for next season. Right now at home, you, of course, have Denver, the Raiders, and the Chargers. Then you get Jacksonville, the Tennessee Titans, the LA Rams, the Seattle Seahawks, and once again, the Buffalo Bills. The Bills in the regular season for a third straight season, I believe it is. You played in Buffalo 2 years ago. You got Buffalo, of course, this year. Then you get Buffalo next year. It's been a while since the Rams have been here. I don't think the Rams have been in Kansas City as the LA Rams, have they? Now I'm just kind of debating that. Now these thoughts are coming to my head off the top of my head, and it's frustrating me because I wish I could have looked that up before I went through this schedule. But a lot of these matchups are great, and they're probably going to be really expensive tickets because you don't see these teams a lot. You know, Seattle Seahawks coming into town, Russell Wilson, if he's still there. That's another fun matchup. Feels like the Chiefs play the Titans every single year, whether that be in Nashville or in Kansas City. But they'll get the Titans again. You have those AFC West matchups. You'll get the Jacksonville Jaguars. Trevor Lawrence making his first appearance at Arrowhead Stadium. Who will the next coach of the Jaguars be? It'll be maybe his first appearance at Arrowhead Stadium. And then on the road, once again, you have those AFC West matchups. Then you get the Houston Texans, who we just talked about down in Houston. You get the Colts on the road, the 49ers on the road, Arizona, as Marco pointed out, the Bengals again on the road, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on the road. Actually, Marco, now I'm curious of this. Of those games, home or away, what would be the one you would love to see as the week one opener for Kansas City?
Maybe Chiefs-Chargers. Depending on Chiefs win the Super Bowl. Oh, in Kansas City. It's a good question because there's a lot of teams on that schedule, too, where if they win the Super Bowl, Chiefs could be going up against them on the road. Man, that's a – maybe Chiefs-Bengals open up the season.
I was just thinking that.
They did Chiefs-Browns. Yeah, they did Chiefs-Browns this season. If somebody else wins the Super Bowl, it's not Chiefs and Bengals. Yeah, Chiefs and Bengals, week one.
I feel like a Chiefs and Bengals on Sunday Night Football would be fantastic. I think that would be the way to open up the season. I think the Bengals would be great. Tampa Bay, yes. I think you got to either put Tampa Bay very early in the season or you got to put Tampa Bay at the end of the season. Because I either want teams at their best, their peak performance, or I want it very early on where you're still trying to get those storylines heading into the NFL season. So I think I'd take a home opener against Seattle. I'd take a road game against the 49ers, Super Bowl rematch. I'd take a road game against Cincinnati, or I'd take a road game against Tampa Bay. Because also keep in mind, I want some of those tough games out of the way early on. You know, you don't really want them in the middle of the season when if you start slow, now you got to go through that gauntlet. The Chiefs really had it this year, having to play, who was it? Dallas, Green Bay, and the Raiders in three straight weeks. Like, that was a tough stretch for Kansas City. They won all of them. Now they got some help. They got some luck from having COVID problems with the Cowboys, COVID problems with the Packers, and they just hammered the Raiders. But if the Chiefs are going to have this brutal schedule, I feel like the best way to go about it is having those, and I know they can't control that, but having those tough games early on because you aren't getting their teams at their best. And if you do slip up a little bit, now we know the Chiefs could be 3-4 7 weeks into the season, and then they can all of a sudden just turn it around and win 8 in a row. Feels like that is always a possibility with Patrick Mahomes as your quarterback. When we come back here on The Shift, we'll get into our three heroes to the game. And is Shohei Ohtani the face of baseball right now? You are listening to The Shift on ESPN Wichita, 92.3 FM, Wichita's new sports leader. Welcome back into The Shift on ESPN Wichita, 92.3 FM, Wichita's new sports leader. I am your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. Reminder that this Saturday you can listen to the Raiders and the Bengals, the AFC wildcard game, right here on ESPN Wichita, 92.3 FM. It'll be fun. You'll get to see who is moving on when that game happens down in Cincinnati. Will it be the Raiders or will it be Cincinnati? Both of those teams have a chance of playing Kansas City if the Chiefs do advance. Also, are you ready for NFL wildcard weekend? ESPN Wichita has a chance for you to win a Tyreek Hill and Patrick Mahomes game time frame picture. Follow and like ESPN Wichita 92.3 FM, like the posts, and for a bonus entry to win, tag a sports fan in your life in the comments below. With it being Friday, we only have now, I mean, if the Chiefs make it all the way to the Super Bowl, we will have four more three keys and four more three heroes until next year. But with it being Friday, it is now time for our three heroes to the game. Who will help Kansas City or lead Kansas City to victory on Sunday night? Number one on my list, Daryl the Barrel Williams. You know, I feel like whether he's the number one back, whether he's the number two back, he's going to be involved in the offense. You know, he may only have 60 rushing yards, but he could have 30 to 40 receiving yards and gives you over 100 total yards. Give you a touchdown. I mean, when you look at it, the Chiefs have three players this year that have over 1,000 scrimmage yards. Who do you think they are? Well, the easy ones are that skill position players. Of course, Patrick Mahomes has over 1,000 yards. But skill position guys, well, there's some obvious ones. Travis Kelce, bingo. Tyreek Hill, you can check that box. Then Daryl Williams has over 1,000 scrimmage yards this season and wasn't even the starting running back coming into the year. But I feel like anytime he's on the field, he does things well. He doesn't turn it over. If you need him to pick up a first down on 3rd and 3, 3rd and 2, he gets it done. He's very reliable out of the backfield. And hell, all these running backs really are reliable out of the backfield. We saw Jerick McKinnon be very reliable in Denver last weekend. So these guys can get it done. But I feel like Daryl Williams of that running back core will have the best game on Sunday night. I feel like he'll have a touchdown. I think he'll get close to 100 total yards in that game. The second on my list, coming off his first 100-yard receiving game, Mecole Hardman. I feel like Hardman will have another big impact in this game. I feel like they're going to try to utilize him, maybe not as much as they did in Denver, because keep in mind, Tyreek Hill was banged up in that game, so you had to use Mecole Hardman a lot. I feel like, though, with the way Denver defended him, and Denver had a top three defense in the NFL, and they still couldn't figure out what to do with Mecole Hardman, I don't see the Steelers having much more success than Denver had. So using those swing passes, getting him involved on those under routes. You know, not asking him to go 10, 12 yards down the field, run a perfect route, and catch a bullet pass from Patrick Mahomes. No, you can get him involved with screen passes, swing passes, you know, little out routes, targeting him 7 to 8 times a game, and he gives you 6, 7 catches. And I think if you get that confidence up for him, then you're not panicking every time Tyreek Hill is limping off the field. You know, Travis Kelce's a little bit banged up. If you can trust those guys behind them, your offense doesn't take snaps off. You know, you're not having to completely alter your offense. Now, of course, if Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce aren't in the game, your offense is going to look a little bit different. But you can pick up the slack if Mecole Hardman is playing well and utilized right in that offense. So I feel like on Sunday night, they will use Mecole Hardman correctly. It'll be similar to the way they did in Denver, and I don't think the Steelers are going to have an answer for him. The third guy on my list, my third hero to the game, I feel like we're due for Tyrann Mathieu to do something special. It's been a long time since Tyrann Mathieu, I think has had an interception. It's been a little bit. I want to say it was the Raiders game that Mathieu had an interception in Vegas, by the way. I feel like he's due. I see the Steelers turning it over 2 or 3 times in this game, and I feel like Tyrann Mathieu will be the cause of at least one of them. Maybe he's coming off a blitz. You know, there are times that Mathieu just comes flying in off the edge, and you know Big Ben can't move. And I feel like in this game, with this defense being able to hound Ben Roethlisberger, Tyrann Mathieu's going to get a shot at getting one of his interceptions. You know, this is when you pay big money to those players in the postseason. It's why you paid Frank Clark, and we may see Frank Clark pop up a lot in the postseason. You know, Tyrann Mathieu wants that contract extension. It starts now. You could argue it starts in the regular season, but you know what? This is where you really earn your bucks. Can you get your team to the Super Bowl again? You got to be one of the key guys on that defense. I feel like Tyrann Mathieu will be one of those guys, and I feel like he'll have a very big and important game on Sunday. So my three heroes to the game, the first playoff edition, Darrell Williams, Mecole Hardman, and Tyrann Mathieu. Marco, any to add on that list before we move on?
Rick Burkholder, the trainer.
That's a good one. That's thinking outside the box, Marco.
Keep those plays healthy. He's a hero each and every week, but he's an important one for the next foreseeable weeks that the Chiefs are fortunate enough to be playing in February. So, yeah, Rick Burkholder, man, saved Patrick Mahomes' season probably on, a couple of years ago with the
dislocated kneecap.
Yep, dislocated kneecap in Denver. And so just seems like everyone's going to be healthy for this one. I know that Hill and Hilaire yesterday were limited participants in practice, but I think that's just precautionary stuff. It's like, all right, these guys are fresh, ready to go for Sunday. So Rick Burkholder, man, the trainer, head medical staff over there. Let's go, baby.
And you know that health is a huge part of the postseason.
Oh, yeah.
The healthiest team usually can go all the way. And that kind of comes down to luck, once again, as we pointed out, and how the Chiefs can make a postseason run. You got to be healthy. You know, you may think that having an elite quarterback, having a Patrick Mahomes, you can beat anybody. And yes, you can. But even those guys have their kryptonite. And you know what? I feel like every quarterback in the NFL's kryptonite is not having time in the pocket, not having an offensive line.
Yeah.
So making sure, because you look at this offensive line now, you know, Orlando Brown, he had that calf injury right before the Cincinnati game. That was a big reason. Then you lose Lucas Niang for the year. I don't know how many more guys you can afford to lose on that offensive line. We had Orlando Brown at left tackle, Joe Tooney at left guard, Creed Humphrey at center, Trey Smith at right guard, and then you have Andrew Wiley at right tackle. Right now, when you look at it, you know, I think the only comfortable guy I feel like that can come on the field, if there were an injury, is Nick Allegretti, because he already did that in Cincinnati this year and played really well. But, I mean, you know, if you lose Orlando Brown, what happened? Let's just go piece by piece here. You lose Orlando Brown. Now, obviously, knock on wood, you're not hoping for anything to happen. Of course, nobody wants to see an injury, but you're planning ahead. You know, the Chiefs do have to do this. In a scenario, you lose somebody, where do you piece together, guys? You lose Orlando Brown, you're probably shifting Joe Tooney out to left tackle and bringing Nick Allegretti in the game. You know, any of those guard positions, Nick Allegretti's the first guy off the bench. Kyle Long would be available. Austin Blythe, maybe. Prince Tega Winago, who's, I don't think, played a regular season NFL snap yet. Like, that's the biggest part right now. And I think with this Chiefs medical staff, this training staff, you know, making sure any way possible this offensive line stays healthy. You do not want to see a similar situation what happened last year. You want that offensive line at full strength. Of course you do. And you want this entire team to be healthy. But it's football. It's a violent sport. Guys get injured. You just got to make sure for as long as you can that you can either trust the guy behind them or you can have that luck and have health throughout the entire postseason. But we certainly will see what happens on this playoff path for the Kansas City Chiefs. Before we get to fact or fiction, we will get into some baseball talk real quick because we've been talking about football all day. But I thought this was interesting because right now baseball's kind of in the dumps. You know, it's not fun to talk about. They're in a lockout. MLB Players Association, the MLB, they're not seeing eye to eye. You know, baseball's not doing a good job of promoting its sport. You know, we still have people complaining about bat flips, showing emotion in the game. You know, it's not the right way. You need to show that you've been there. No, you don't. It's sports. It's fun. You're supposed to have that flair, that passion for the game because you know what? You're playing a kid's game. It's why it's fun to watch the NFL. It's fun to see guys dancing on the field. It's fun to see emotion. But Shohei Ohtani, who, really, I mean, if you don't root for Shohei Ohtani, I don't know why you even watch baseball. No, he's such a likable guy, and he wants baseball to be popular. Because you think about it, over in Japan, baseball is wildly popular. You know, and he was a king over there. And he still is kind of being treated as a king over here because what other guy in the history of this sport has been able to hit 40-plus home runs and throw 100-mile-an-hour fastballs? Not many. But I thought this was really cool, what Shohei Ohtani said. I believe this was yesterday, I think it was. Yes, yesterday this article came out on CBS from RJ Anderson, an interview with GQ, actually. So this is what Ohtani had to say. Quote, "Baseball was born here, and I personally want baseball to be the most popular sport in the United States. So if I can contribute in any way to help that, I'm more than open to it," he says. "But if you look at the whole baseball population in the world, it's a lot less than like soccer and basketball because only select countries are really big on baseball. But in those countries where it's huge, it's unbelievably huge." Those are great words from Shohei Ohtani. And you know what? Baseball is doing themselves no help by not promoting this guy more than anybody else. Right, he comes over from Japan. You know, you're extending your outreach. You know, the Dominican Republic is huge in baseball. Cuba's huge in baseball. Japan's huge in baseball. Venezuela, you know, Puerto Rico. All these places around the world, they're big in baseball. And when you have a guy like this, a generational talent, that's how you make baseball popular again. Because if you take a average person to a game, or you know, you take one of your friends to a baseball game and they don't watch baseball, you know what would intrigue them? You see Shohei Ohtani up to bat, it's a 470-foot home run, and then you go, yeah, he may be pitching today or he may be pitching tomorrow, and if we come out to that game, he'll be throwing 100 miles an hour. Like, he could very well win the Cy Young one year, or he could win the MVP or win a Silver Slugger. Like, we have not seen anything like Shohei Ohtani. And you know what? Is baseball the most popular sport, or will it ever get to that in the United States? No, it won't, because I feel like NFL will always dominate that spot in the United States. But baseball can get so much better from where it is right now, and it starts with promoting guys like Shohei Ohtani. I mean, I've seen Ohtani play live in person, I'd probably say 4 or 5 times maybe that's too high, maybe like 2 times I've seen him play live, maybe 2 or 3 times. But in that game that I was there, everything about what he does is different. You know, you watch some guys come to the plate and you watch a line drive, 105 off the bat. Or you see a towering home run. I saw Jorge Soler hit a 465-foot home run. You're like, dang, that is a guy that not many people can do that in baseball. But then I see Shohei Ohtani play, whether that be hitting or pitching. I've seen him do both. And it's completely ridiculous. I mean, I will never forget one of the games I was at Kauffman Stadium. I want to say it was last year. The Angels were in town. It was early in the season. It was a cold game. And Ohtani's up in, I want to say, the seventh or the eighth inning. It's a close game at this point. But Ohtani comes up. I think it's first and second or bases loaded. And he's facing Scott Barlow. Best Royals reliever you could probably say. You could make a good case Scott Barlow is not only the best reliever for the Royals, but one of the better relievers in the American League. But here comes Ohtani. And you just felt like something was about to happen. You know, you were going to get some remarkable play. You always felt that with Mike Trout, and you still do with Mike Trout when you watch him play in person. But Ohtani, I think it was a fastball up and in. It was like 95, 96. And he turned on it harder than any player I've ever seen turn on a baseball. And it didn't hit it drilled the wall. It was a line drive. I thought it was going to be a home run. Complete line drive. And I look up to the scoreboard, that massive scoreboard at Kauffman Stadium. The exit velo on the line drive was 122. On a fastball up and in. Most guys will just flick it the other way. But Ohtani had the bat speed, the talent, to turn on a fastball up and in and rip it down the line. And I'm not kidding. There was no height to it. There was no loft. It was a line drive like you'd see that would one hop to the center fielder, but it kept carrying, and you just had a thud on the padded wall out in right field. I mean, absolutely smoked the ball. I've never seen a ball hit that hard. I don't know if I ever will again. I mean, 122 was ridiculous. But that's the type of player you need to embrace. You know, somebody that also is a very stand-up guy, a very fun guy to watch. He's smiling all the time. Why do you think Salvador Perez is so popular in baseball? He's got that big smile. He looks like he loves the game. So does Shohei Ohtani. And that's what you need to start pinpointing in baseball. If you were trying to promote the game, you pick the right guys to do it. You know, as much as I love Mike Trout, and I think Mike Trout is the best player I've ever seen in my life, as much as I discredited Shohei Ohtani there. Mike Trout's the best player I've ever seen in my life. I don't know if I'll ever see a player as good as Mike Trout. But he's just not really a guy with a ton of flair. Or he's a very humble guy. He's a very quiet guy. And there are seasons that he'll hit 330, have 40 home runs, 120 RBIs, and you're like, that's just Mike Trout. But like Bryce Harper has a little bit more flair. That's why you can promote him. You know, in baseball, like Jacob deGrom, electric stuff. Probably the most electric stuff in baseball. But he's kind of a humble guy. You know, that's why baseball just needs more flair. And when people try to bring down guys, you know, bat flipping, celebrating on the mound, having fun, that's what makes the sport worse. Because then you can't promote them because people don't know who they are. But Shohei Ohtani right now, I feel like should definitely be trending in the direction of being the face of Major League Baseball. He doesn't think baseball is dying. And if baseball does the right thing in promoting its top players, its players with the most flair, Fernando Tatis, another guy, he was just on the cover of MLB The Show. Like, that's what you can keep baseball from dying and get it trending in the right direction. With that, it is now time for our favorite segment of Fact or Fiction. Five questions, five takes, under 5 minutes. Marco, fire away.
All right, Jack, Fact or Fiction. David Coley gets another head coaching job.
I feel like with David Coley, the unfortunate reality of it is that he didn't have enough time, of course. He had one season. But I don't know if any other team in the NFL is going to look at that and say he's worth taking a shot on, you know. If he's only been in one season, he was 4-13. He didn't do enough, unfortunately, to say, okay, we're going to give him a chance somewhere else, and we're going to give him multiple years. I think he'll probably land in another spot, but it'll be as an offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, something like that. It's just a really bad thing that happened to David Coley, but I'm going to go fiction. I don't think he'll get another head coaching job in the NFL.
Fact or fiction, the Chiefs win more than 11 games next season.
I mean, you got that gauntlet of a schedule. You know, a really, really tough schedule both home and away. If they win more than 11 games, I still think that they win the AFC West. You know, you get back into the postseason. But you know this Chiefs team is not going to finish anything less than 10 wins. So I think they'll win more than 11 games next season.
Fact or fiction, Travis Kelce leads the Chiefs in receiving yards in the postseason.
I mean, I'm going back and forth between Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. And you know Kelce has really had his big games. One of the best games he ever had was against the Texans in the divisional round in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So am I going to stick with that and go with Kelce? I think I am. I feel like he's the security blanket. And it's a different Travis Kelce, a different Chiefs team in the postseason. But I feel like I can put more faith in Travis Kelce to have more yards than Tyreek Hill.
Fact or fiction, Shohei Ohtani is the face of baseball.
I would probably say fact now, because after the season he just had, I think baseball knows that, hey, now we've seen he really can do it, because early on he was getting hurt. You know, he wasn't always pitching. He wasn't always hitting that well. He just never stayed healthy. Now you've seen him stay healthy. You've seen what he can do. I think fact right now, the face of baseball is Shohei Ohtani.
And lastly, fact or fiction, the Chiefs cover versus the Steelers.
So I keep going back and forth right now. I feel like the line, I don't think it's changed. I believe that it's 12.5. Yes, 12.5, over under at 46.5. And I've said this, and I hope I'm not jinxing anything, but I feel like the Chiefs could shoot themselves in the foot a couple of times and still win this game by double digits. I just see it being very similar to what happened, if not worse for Pittsburgh than it was the first time around. So I think, fact, Kansas City is going to win this game by, I'm going to go 17. I think I'm going to go like 27-10. It's still a playoff game. I think the Steelers will keep it somewhat close, maybe in the first quarter, early in the second quarter. But I think Kansas City eventually runs away with it. They get a 27-10 win, and they cover and advance to the divisional round. That wraps up another edition of The Shift on ESPN Wichita, 92.3 FM, Wichita's new sports leader. I've been your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. Coming up next, we have ESPN Radio right here on ESPN Wichita, 92.3 FM.